Welcome to the Partnerships with Purpose podcast, where we explore ways to engage communities in research and other academic projects. I'm Jamie Masterson, and in this episode on how the planning process enables movement, we hear again from Dr. Shannon Van Zandt, former Associate Executive Dean of the School of Architecture. She talks about the role of community planning as a method for universities to authentically engage communities. She says it's not just the generation of knowledge, but the application of that knowledge. Wow. Okay. Let's hear what she had to say.
The three of us, plus a few other people, really worked on how to restructure the Master of Urban Planning curricula so that it led to the best possible outcomes for the target communities and for the communities that we're working with. And, you know, and at first, at least in my mind, I really wanted to be able to work with communities for the full 2 years of the program. To kind of bring them in and basically have them be a laboratory for the students for their entire time. Because the students start out with learning, you know, about land use and about social and demographic data and doing analyses, things like that, that, you know, that roll into what we would call a state of the community report or a current state of whatever community that we're working with. And it's an opportunity for them to, you know, learn about census data and learn how to analyze data and present data and then be able to convert that into to spatial understanding of the community through a land use plan and infrastructure plans, and then finally to make a plan, which is what the students do in the second year of the program. And what we learned is that the communities don't have that kind of time. And so working with us for 2 years was not really possible, but working with us for 1 year was. And so we adapted. I think we adapted to kind of using our first year courses as kind of experimental communities. Like, we knew that some communities were interested in working with us, so we would use those as examples in our coursework so that students were doing, you know, population projections and economic base analysis and all of these things for communities that may become our target community.
Right.
And sometimes they did and sometimes they didn't, but it's at least it was a real place to work with. It was real data to work with, and it gave the students an opportunity to utilize not just secondary data sources, but some primary data sources too, you know, and using Google Earth to do a housing condition assessment or something like that, that they were working with real places instead of hypothetical places, which is, you know, sometimes easier to do. It's probably what a lot of planning programs do, but I think it's more meaningful to the students to work with real places. And so they still do some of that groundwork, but then you hire interns during the summer.
We have 10 this summer.
So almost the whole class, actually. So maybe it ends up, you know, serving the whole class anyway. But we hire interns during the summer, and which is a great opportunity for them because they need an internship. But they're working in the way that a real firm would work. And so they're getting a good experience, but they're also prepping for the second year classes to have the data and the analysis in place to allow the plan making process to begin.
Ready to go.
Yeah. And so we've been able to integrate, you know, at least three or four courses in addition to the studio course that are typically integrated in some way with the target community that we're planning to work with, as well as opening it up to courses outside the department. Outside the program, I should say, because sometimes it's still within the department, but it may also be outside the department.
Well, and we have worked outside the department, and I guess we are able to use the planning process as sort of a foundation when we go through the public participation and we learn what additional needs there are, then we can find other faculty and expertise to kind of plug into the process and say, oh, we need, a logo design or a wastewater treatment, you know, design, what we worked with engineering on, and whatever projects we can match together to meet that community need. But I guess I'm curious, like, what is it about the planning profession that makes this the right you know, the match?
That's a great question. And I, that's also something I think I've learned over the process of this, that, you know, I kind of knew that planners were trained as facilitators, but to see it in action, and I will say I see it in action both in our high impact service learning. I also see it happening in our research projects, where we're recognizing that cities, communities are facing really complex challenges. Challenges from climate change, challenges from COVID-19. I mean, all kinds of ongoing challenges that affect job availability, that affect the quality of the natural environment, that affect their housing. You know, all of these things that are kind of global issues, especially related to climate change, but not just related to climate change, are challenging communities. And I think planners are the profession that is in the best position to facilitate a response to that. And that's, you know, we joke sometimes about planners that they're jacks of all trades, master of none kind of thing, where we're not an expert in anything except facilitating other people to work together. Mm-hmm. And I think that we have knowledge about land use and economic development and housing and population demography and civil engineering and transportation engineering. We have some knowledge about all of those things, but we're not experts in any of them. Mm-hmm. And so what I think that we do well as planners is to build teams and facilitate teams to work together. And I think that's what we're seeing when our classes identify particular projects that we need to reach out to civil engineering, or we need to reach out to graphic design, or we need to reach out to landscape architecture, or whatever it is, to help solve those problems. And those are the same teams that are working together in real life. You know, those are the big firms that have architects and engineers and surveyors and landscape architects and planners. And so we're able to recreate that for the students here, which I think is great, because one of the things that we hear a lot from our former students is this loss of interdisciplinarity that has happened over the last, I don't know, half a century, really, you know, we originally started as an environmental design program in the College of Architecture, which was supposed to encompass all of that stuff. And over time, it became very siloed. And I think the university or the academic culture has caused that, because we have to prove that we are experts in our discipline and that we are making contributions to our discipline. But that's made it difficult for some of us to work interdisciplinarily. But yet we need to be doing that more, because those are the problems that we're facing. And I see that in our research projects as well, because, I mean, I personally work with a lot of engineers. You know, part of our Center of Excellence in Community Resilience Planning that's funded by the National Institutes of Standards and Technology, where we are the social science team here at A&M, and we're working with more than 100 engineers. And we don't speak the same language, and we don't approach things the same way. And we've really had to learn from one another in the same way that I think the students are doing when they are facilitating the appropriate teams to serve the community needs, is that there's not one discipline that can solve these problems. It is something that has to bring together. And it's not just the engineers, but it's also it's not just the engineers and the social scientists, but it's also the policy scientists, and understanding why some things get done and other things don't, or how we're going to be able to afford major hard infrastructure, structural mitigation, rather than doing land use planning, non-structural mitigation, which is a lot less expensive, but is actually harder to accomplish for political and cultural reasons. And so being able to, you know, weigh those options and understand the consequences of various decisions is something that planners are good at, and it's something that they're trained to do. And it's an underappreciated role. You know, planning is not the most glamorous profession to have. A lot of people, my whole life, you know, they say I'm a planner and they're like, what is that? You know, they don't know what it is. And if they do know what it is, they think of transportation planners first, as, you know, the congestion is terrible. That's like, that's what the response I get all the time. And so to try to explain what we do is a challenge, but But I think it's really critically necessary, especially facing some of these really severe environmental challenges.
And so what I'm hearing is, like, as a university, you know, we're an unbiased group, you know, that can assist, facilitate a process in places that have the most need or might be at the most risk for a different variety of different things that you mentioned. And that the planning process, a participatory process, is a holistic way to kind of have some of these discussions around these issues. And then the other thing is that, you know, for a university, it just doesn't happen. You know, at, you've been able to, together, we've been able to, set the curricula up in a way that is sequenced to facilitate this process. And then also, you know, now that the program is not in technically in the department, we've been kind of pulled up to the university level, and there's a partnership between the department and the provost office. So I guess, what do you see the change in that, and the benefits of that? Or
I think that has enormous potential for us being able to do more and more. And yeah. I don't think it's happened yet. I don't think that we have built the financial capacity to really, you know, enlarge our staff the way that we need to, given the demand that we have. I'm hopeful, you know, that will happen. Yeah. We definitely have models for it. I mean, that's how Ag Extension is funded, with funding directly from the state legislature. In my dreams, that's what would happen for this program, is that it would be, you know, it would have its own funding stream that would allow us to really scale up. I don't know when or if that will ever happen, but I think we've made a lot of progress, and we've certainly demonstrated our value. I think we've done a good job of that, and every community that we have worked with has really benefited from working with us, been able to leverage our plans into grant proposals that have allowed them to actually implement some of the things that we've proposed. And of course, that doesn't always happen. But it's also, you know, the plans serve as a framework for how to make the cities better. And whether they get funding for it or whether they just include it in their existing funding streams, those plans can become real. And, you know, we would love to be able to do that for every community that needs it. And we don't have the capacity to do that right now. But I think we could, you know, we could, in the way that Ag Extension is able to work, and really leveraging them as well, because they do have people on the ground in most communities that we don't. And so a lot of what we do is building those relationships, working with those agents to build relationships, because we're not on the ground there, but we can be there. And we try to be there as much as we can. Of course, distance is an issue, and cost of travel is an issue, but we've come up with creative ways to be there as often as we can. And you know, the more support we get from the university and from the state legislature, the more that we'll be able to do. And I think, you know, being at the university level, the provost level, helps, helps our visibility, mm-hmm. and it helps us get access to the people that can help make that happen for us. So I definitely see that we've been able to expand our footprint. You get a lot of requests for doing the engaged research piece, which is different than the applied piece, but they facilitate one another and they work well together. But you know, I think A&M and most land grant universities, we are always trying to balance between this goal of helping the community and the goal of creating knowledge, new knowledge, as a research one university. And I think we do it really well. It's different than being a non-land grant, where it's all about creating knowledge and there's no obligation to serve the community. And it's different than being a non-research intensive university that serves the community. We're trying to do both. Yeah. And we're trying to leverage the knowledge that we're creating as researchers and apply it to communities. But we're also trying to learn from the communities what their needs are. And I think that's a really critical piece from a research perspective, because researchers like myself, you know, we assume we know what a community needs, but we have learned through Texas Target communities that we don't always know what a community needs or what's most important to them. And I think particularly from a resilience perspective, we've got to ask them, you know, what is your biggest problem? It may not be what we imagined it to be.
Right.
And we also, you know, we really, and I learned this from John Cooper, we want to avoid exploiting neighborhoods and communities. And a lot of them get studied all the time, particularly the more vulnerable communities. But we want to be in a balanced relationship. We don't want to be taking from them like a lot of universities do, frankly, and we have been guilty of ourselves. We want to give back, you know, and I think that's the other thing about planning as a discipline too, is that we're an applied discipline. We're not, you know, our goal is to figure out how to actually make things better. So it's not just the generation of knowledge, but it's the application of that knowledge. We talk a lot about knowledge to action, mm-hmm. and that's a unique planning phrase even. Yeah. It comes from John Friedman about knowledge to action. And that's, you know, a lot of disciplines, a lot of the social sciences, they just want the knowledge. And at a research one university, it's all about the knowledge. But at a land grant university, it's also about the action. And so we want to be those actors. We want to be the people that are making it happen and that are making it happen better than it has been before.
Shannon really hit it home there. That is really why planning as a discipline positioned in the university has enabled better community engagement. In our next episode, we're actually going to hear from a community partner and the value of going through a planning process as they developed a comprehensive community master plan. If you would like to learn more about the program, please follow us on Instagram at TAMUTXTC. Also, you can check out our website, collaborations.tamu.edu/TXTC. And you can, of course, email us, texastargetcommunities@tamu.edu. Consider donating to support our small, low-capacity communities in Texas through our Good Neighbor Fund. Thank you so much. See you next time.